Cars honking and braking, and at the end of the first block, we turned right, hit dirt, and I now gave the horse the spurs again. I was beginning to understand that the faster we went, the better Cherokee could keep his drunken balance. We were racing up the street, flying past houses and neighborhood dogs. The Oxley girls, older than me, were coming in from a date, I guess, and I could see that they couldn't believe what they were seeing, a drunken horse racing by them in a wild, wobbly run. By the time I got to the gates of our Rancho Grande, I realized that a car had been following me the whole way. It was that same red-headed woman who'd helped me in the bar, along with another woman, too. And once they saw me go in through the big white gates of our Rancho Grande, they turned around. Cherokee was pouring with sweat and beginning to sober up by the time we got to the corrals. It was a good thing my feet hadn't been able to reach the stirrups, because the moment we quit running, he fell out from under me, rolling over on his side. I scrambled away as fast as I could so I wouldn't get caught under his 1,100-pound body. He was sick. He was gagging. I guess it must have been his first drunk, because he really didn't know how to handle his liquor like Lady. Hell, the old Morgan mare would have just let me lead her out of the entrance of the bar and walk her home as easy as eating apple pie. The next morning, my parents didn't get up for breakfast, and they barely made it to lunch. When my mother did get up, she fed her birds and was whistling like one of her canaries. I guess that my parents were in love once again. Chapter 18. Waking up the next day, I just knew that something kind of extraordinary had happened to me last night when I'd ridden that drunken horse home. It was like I now just knew deep inside of myself that I wasn't going to die like my brother had died. I could now see so clearly that my brother Joseph had been absolutely right when he'd said that his was very different from mine, that his had been going on for a long time, and so he'd already used up all of his 9 lives, but I, on the other hand, had probably only used 2 or 3 of mine. Racing through the streets on Cherokee, I'd also come to know deep inside of me that I wasn't alone, that none of us were ever alone, especially when we had so much familia up in heaven pulling for us. I had my brother Joseph in heaven. I had my 2 grandmothers. I had my father's older brother, Jose the Great, and I had my great-grandfather, Don Pio, the greatest man who'd lived next to Benito Juarez, the Abraham Lincoln of Mexico. Heaven was full of my familia, and our amigos, too. And so this was why Cherokee hadn't tripped and fallen face-first in the street into oncoming traffic. Strings were being pulled for me up in heaven. Lucky strings. Going to school that day, I don't know how to explain it. I now felt so much older than the other kids in my grade. And I was older by a year because I'd flunked the year before. But there was something else. No, I mean, I was way older somehow. In fact, the teacher herself and even the principal didn't impress me or scare me anymore. I was now un hombre, and no one was ever going to walk on my shadow again without my permission, as mi papá had so well explained to me. People now had to speak to me with respect, and they had to make good horse sense, too. They could never again bully me just because they were older, bigger, were a priest or a teacher. And man, did this feel good deep inside of me, especially after we, the Mexican kids, had gotten beaten down so much ever since kindergarten. And that playground teacher, the Gallo Gallina, as we'd nicknamed her, I sure wished that I knew where she lived. She'd tortured us worse than anyone, and she'd enjoyed it. I'd like to set a dynamite charge to her house and blow her ass to smithereens. God must have heard my request, because the very next day I heard my mother call information and get someone's phone number and their address. This meant that all I had to do was pick up the phone and call information to get that damn Gallo Gallina's phone number and home address, so I could have my revenge if I really wanted to. I loved it. Then school was out. I was free for the summer. And my parents were still behaving like they were in love. They decided to take a trip to Mexico for a month with our older sister Tencha. My sister Linda and I were not going to go. We were to stay with Hans and Helen on their chicken ranch in Bonzel. I hated to do this, because I wasn't going to be allowed to take the .22 Winchester that my dad had just bought me, so I could continue to practice my shooting every afternoon. And I was getting really good with my pump-action .22 Winchester. Our parents left with Tencha in our new Cadillac, and my little sister and I went out to Bonzel. My sister and I learned German and how to make our beds with square corners and how to clean the eggs and feed the chickens and mark the chart of each chicken so that we'd know who laid eggs and who hadn't. After 2 weeks of not laying regularly, these non-productive chickens were beheaded and cooked for dog food. Uncooked chickens were never fed to the ranch dogs, Hans explained to my sister and me, because the taste of fresh blood could turn even a good dog into a chicken killer overnight. A few days later, I said that I wanted to have guitar lessons. That song of my brother's with the cowboy chasing the devil's red-eyed herd just kept singing in my head all the time. Hans started driving me to Oceanside twice a week so I could get guitar lessons. I told my guitar teacher that I wanted to learn the words to my brother's song. He got me the sheet music, and my sister and I began to recite the words to the music every afternoon. I don't know how, but Linda could already read better than me, and she hadn't even started school. Singing Ghost Riders in the Sky under the big pine tree felt so good and full of magic, and yet it also felt real sad. When our parents returned, I didn't recognize them at first, especially with the funny, colorful, old-world Mexican dresses that my sister and mother were wearing. That evening, my mother and Tencha showed us all the pictures that they'd taken in Mexico, especially in Acapulco. The summer ended and the days began to shorten, and it was almost time for me to start school again. This year I'd be going to the Catholic school at the San Luis Rey Mission. But I didn't want to go to school. What was the point, to just find out that I was stupider than the year before? I could very well see that every year that I went to school, the reading was getting harder and harder, and I was just getting left behind further and further. I took my sister Linda aside, because this year she was starting kindergarten, and explained to her that it was not a kinder garden that she was going to go to, as our parents thought, that teachers could be mean, especially since we were Mexican. She laughed and said that she'd just tell them that she was Chinese if they asked her, because she loved Chinese food like our father. I told her that I didn't know if that would work, but she seemed so sure that I just didn't say anything more. Late one afternoon, just a couple of days before my sister Linda and I were to start school, I suddenly felt that little quiet purring behind my left ear, and I instantly knew that I was supposed to saddle up Midnight Duke and go riding down to the sea. Then I remembered that this was exactly what my brother Joseph had wanted to do before he died. I hurried over to the horse stables, caught Duke, halted him, took him to the fence by the ramp where we loaded the cattle into our cattle truck, brushed him out real good. Then I hauled my blanket and my little saddle up on the ramp and got myself up high enough, because I was still too short, so I could saddle up. Then I climbed up on the fence, took off the halter, and bridled Duke, got off the fence, turned him about, cinched him up good one last time, then climbed back up on the fence so I could mount him. It was really late now. This was truly not a good time for me to go riding down through the marshlands to the sea. I'd seen how much trouble my brother had gotten into for taking just one wrong turn. But for some reason, I wasn't scared. No, I was all excited inside. It was like this purring, this humming, was guiding me, just as I'd been guided home off that tall mesa out by the cemetery where Shep had leaped into the sky to intercept my brother's soul, and I'd also been guided the night that I'd had to ride Cherokee home from the bar. I mounted and quickly took off, riding fast so I could get across the marshes while there was still plenty of light. How I'd get back in the dark, I had no idea. But I just knew that everything was going to be okay. After all, Chava Boy was up in heaven, so if I needed any help, he could get hold of our two grandmothers and Sam and Shep, and even Jesus and Mary if need be. I mean, the heavens were now full of human and animal souls just ready to help me out. Quickly, Duke and I cut through the flat marshes as fast as we could, running when we could on the solid ground, then nibbling our way real slow and easy when we had to. Then we were at Hill Street, the coastal highway at the west end of our Rancho Grande. Duke and I waited for the trucks and cars to give way, then crossed the highway at a walk and took off at a run the moment we hit dirt again. We were in marshlands just this side of the railroad tracks that went from San Diego all the way up to Los Angeles. I galloped Duke under the railroad bridge, hoping that no train came flying by overhead, scaring the living shit out of Duke and me. Then I saw them, the waves rolling up on the shores of Buccaneer Beach just ahead of us. It was a beautiful low tide. The father sun was just beginning to set into the sea. The whole sky to the west was painted in colors of pink and orange and red, with streaks of lavender and silver. Duke was so happy to see the water that he wanted to gallop. I had to hold him back until we got to the sand. Once we were on the sand, which glistened like a mirror, he wanted to run out into the water itself. What the hell? I gave him his head, and he turned north instead of south, the way I would have gone, and he was running wide open in the shallow surf like he knew where he was going. I wondered if he, too, was being guided by the holy hands of God, massaging him behind his ears. Once again, I remembered that this was what my brother Joseph had wanted to do, come riding to the beach on Midnight Duke. "Chaba boy!" I called out as we raced in the surf. "Here we are, Duke and I, just like you wanted to do before you." I didn't get to finish my words. Suddenly Duke stopped, just like that, on a dime, and he turned his big, long horse face towards the incoming waves, snapping his ears forward like he was listening to something. I took off my hat and turned my head, wanting to hear too, but I couldn't make anything out except the huge roar of the waves. But Duke seemed to really hear something, because he suddenly screeched out, so loud and strong that his whole ribcage shook between my legs, startling the shit out of me. I couldn't figure out what was going on. Who the hell was he calling to? I couldn't hear anything, and I didn't see any other horses anywhere up or down the beach. Then I saw something that looked like the top of a rock, a great big black rock, just this side of the huge incoming waves. But I couldn't figure out why a horse would be calling to a rock. That was when I first saw the fins, and they were coming in with the waves just to one side of the big rock, straight towards us. Duke was calling to them again and again with such power that I felt that his vibrating body was going to throw me right out of the saddle. I got scared. I couldn't swim very well. And were these sharks or what? And here they were, getting larger and larger as they kept coming right towards us. Then, I don't know why, but that little humming at the back of my head began to speak to me. Not just purr, but actually speak, telling me to keep calm, to remember that dogs, horses, cats, all animals, could hear and smell and sense things far beyond all of my human senses, so I must just trust that Duke knew what he was doing, just as I accepted and trusted a dog to give the warning of an approaching stranger way before I, a human, even knew anything about the situation. I nodded, trusting the little voice that was speaking to me right along with the humming. A great calmness came over me as I watched these huge, thick-bodied, dark-gray beasts rolling in on the waves. They were surfing into the shore right towards us. I now realized that they weren't sharks. No, they were dolphins or porpoises. And there were two of them, and then I saw two more, and three more, and they were all now making eerie sounds to Duke as they kept swimming and rolling in with the waves. Duke began pawing at the water with his right front hoof and continued screeching back to them. When they got in real close to us, he arched his neck and began to make a low, guttural sound, and they began making chirping sounds right back to him, The quick vibrations behind my ears spread to my whole head, and I began to understand things that I'd never understood before. My entire brain was now talking to me as it had never spoken to me before, and it was beautiful. The waves now had magic faces, and I could see that each wave was alive. Everything all around me was now alive in a whole new way that I'd never seen. Duke was now humming, purring too, in quick little vibrations, as he kept giving those low, guttural sounds. The dolphins were rolling their own sounds to Duke and me in the exact same low gut vibrations that I was feel-hearing between my ears. I smiled. What did this mean? That the whole wide world could talk to one another through humming vibrations. This made a lot of blessed, yes, I mean blessed, horse sense. The low guttural sounds now changed and became happy little high-pitched chirps. Hearing this, Duke got so wildly happy and excited that he suddenly lunged forward to go out into the sea and be with the dolphins. But I was scared of going any deeper, and the water was getting deeper and deeper with every lunge he took. I jerked on the reins with all my strength, trying to stop Duke. But then he did something that I'd never seen a horse do in all my life. He turned his head sideways, grabbed hold of the side of the bit with his teeth, and jerked the reins completely out of my hands. My God, Duke had just taken over his own reining. There was nothing I could do. I'd been a fool all these years to ever think that we people who trained horses were the ones in charge. I could now clearly see that horses could outmuscle us and outthink us anytime they wished. Duke was now his own boss. I held on for dear life, praying as fast as I could. Duke was now swimming, and the dolphins were all around us, and they were huge. I couldn't believe it. Their bodies were as big as Duke's. And they just continued talking in low, guttural sounds, then in real fast, high-pitched screeching. Their conversation went on and on. They were just like familia, being so excited and happy to see each other. The last of the father sun was setting, and long shadows were coming in all around us in wonderful colors of red and gold. The waves were now sweeping up over me and the saddle. I had my chest down by the saddle horn with my face in the horse's mane, trying my best to not get swept off by the seawater. This was when I thought I saw something out of the corner of my eyes coming across the water. I lifted my head and saw that it was my brother Joseph, and he was skipping along the top of the water with another guy. They were just beyond the great big rock where the ocean was calmer. The light of the fading day surrounded them, and they looked like they were angels, having great fun as they made their way over the water. All at once, I understood. Oh, my Lord God! This other young man was Jesus Christ himself. I quickly made the sign of the cross over myself, and the humming behind my left ear stopped, just like that. And instantly, I was sailing, knowing everything. Duke and the dolphins were cousins. Horses had originally come from the sea, as did all of life, and now they were simply saying hello, because they were so happy to see each other after so many years. Tears came to my eyes. I'd never seen Jesus before. In the past, I'd always only felt him. My brother Joseph had gone up to heaven and met Jesus, and now they'd both come back so that my brother could play in the surf with Duke and me. I continued crying. I was so happy. My big brother had gotten his ride in the surf after all. It was dark by the time Duke and I started back for home. We went south on the beach and climbed the bluff alongside the steps at Cassidy Street, then headed for home. I had no fear. The first holy star of the night had just come out, and the streets of South Oceanside were wide and clean and safe. I'd found my place. Yes, here, inside of me. Thank you, Papito, I said. Gracias con todo mi corazón. I guess that you really do know what you're doing. Thanks, amigo. I swear that the star above me started blinking at me. By the time I got to our big white gates, I just knew that I was now seeing with my heart eyes, as my Mama Grande had always told me that we humans needed to do before we could re-enter the sacred garden de Papito. Chapter 19. That night I didn't tell my parents about the dolphins, but I did tell my little sister Linda, because I figured that she was still young enough to hear all this without getting scared. She loved it and wanted to tell our parents. "No, Linda," I said, "they might sell Duke."
"Why would they sell Duke?" she asked.
"Don't you remember how mad they got when we told them about Shep and they fired Rosa and Emilio?" She began to cry.
"Why can't we talk to our parents about these things? I want to tell them."
"We can't. They're too old."
"Well, then I never want to get old," she said.
And I agreed with her. I too was beginning to think that getting old wasn't good. Maybe this is why Joseph had left so young. Then it was time for me to start school. I would be going to the Catholic school out at the San Luis Rey Mission, and this school, which was attached to the mission, was nicknamed the Academy of the Little Weed, and it was mostly a girls' school, but they did allow boys to attend up to the fifth grade. I was pretty apprehensive the first day my parents drove me to school, because ever since I'd been little, I'd been scared of nuns with their dark clothes and long robes. The first time I saw a nun, I'd been about 3 years old, I'd yelled, "Cuckoo!" my way of saying ghost, and took off running in fear. I was older now, I was 9, and I'd had 5 years of public education to toughen me up, so I figured that I'd have a pretty good chance doing okay at this school. And I did for the first few weeks, but then one day I blew it. This morning our nun was teaching us the story of creation when I raised up my hand and said that she had it all wrong.
"Oh, is that so?" she said to me. "All right. Since you obviously know more than I do, why don't you come up to the front and teach the class?"
In my ignorance, I didn't realize that she'd just said this to intimidate me and get me to shut the hell up, so I said, "Sure," and I got out of my chair and went to the front of the fourth grade class. Instantly, the humming began, and that quiet little purring voice.
"You see," I said, "originally there were two sister planets, twin Earths, in fact, and when the great flood happened on our other planeta, thousands of people got all the plants and animals off of our sister planeta and put them all on a great sailing ship, which was almost as big as all of San Diego County, with hills and valleys and lakes."
The kids got all excited. And some said that this made a lot more sense than how it was written in the Bible with Noah's puny little ark.
"Sure it does," I said to these kids, "because, you see, also, originally there were two Bibles, one for girls and one for boys, so that men and women would know how to raise their kids. Because, you see, the real reason that we're here on Earth is to plant..."
But I never got to finish my words, because the nun, who'd sat down in the back to listen to me, now leaped up and came racing to the front of the classroom.
"That's enough! Stop this!" she yelled. "How did you dream up all these lies? There were never two Bibles!"
"I didn't dream up any of this," I said. "This was all told to me by my Mama Grande, and also by my dad and mom."
"Are they authorities of the Bible?"
"Oh, yeah, sure. And gambling, too. Because, you see, all of life is a gamble, and so at gambling we must be king."
She suddenly looked very confused.
"Look, just let me go on," I said. "I was just getting to the good part. You see, we never lost the Garden of Eden. We just got fat and lazy and too self-important to keep planting the holy seeds that God sent us to plant here on Earth for his garden."
"God sent us to plant the Garden of Eden?" asked the nun, turning very pale.
"Yes, exactly," I said, feeling good that she was finally catching on. "Just as he has been sending us to other Earths for millions and millions of years.
We're all walking stars, see?
In a flash, her mood changed, and she lunged at me, gripped me by the ear, twisting so hard that I screamed in pain, and dragged me out of the classroom, yelling a word that I'd never heard before.
Blasphemy!
I was taken to the head nun, a real old one, and the priest was called in, and I heard them talk about my parents and my parents' money, and it was decided that they wouldn't dismiss me because of my parents being rich, but that I'd be kept away from all the other kids during recess from now on, so I wouldn't contaminate their minds. Then the next day after school, two priests came to our home to see my parents. My mother made yerba buena tea and cut up some Mexican sweetbread into smaller pieces to serve the two men of God. They then explained to my parents what I'd said at school, and they added that they were sure that my parents had never told me any of this nonsense, being devout Catholics, so I must have gotten my wild ideas about twin sister planets from someone else. I could see that my mother was all upset. She immediately told them how they'd had to fire Rosa and Emilio, two ignorant Indian people, because of all the old Mexican superstitions that they'd been trying to put into my sisters and my head.
Just wait, I said, speaking up. This isn't true. Rosa and Emilio never told us about the two sister planetas. It was you, Mama, and your mother who told me the story of...
But I got cut off before I could finish what I was saying and told that I'd have to leave the room if I couldn't keep still. The two priests ate all the pan dulce and drank all the tea, decided to stay for dinner, had several drinks with my dad, and then they concluded their visit with telling my parents to also not speak any more Spanish to my little sister and me at home, that this was only hindering us from getting the best American education possible. After the two priests left, it was really strange for my sister and me to hear our parents trying to speak to us in only English. My dad finally started laughing when we came to realize that Linda didn't know the difference between the two languages. She thought that a mixture of Spanish and English was a language all of its own. Like, she'd say, "Let's get el caballo horse by his pescuezo neck." Also, because I'd had such a difficult time learning how to read in public school, it was suggested by the two priests that, for a little extra money, I'd be kept away from the other students and given private tutoring by one of the young convent student nuns. The young student nun that taught me privately was so kind and nice and beautiful that it was love at first sight. Within a week, I was bringing her flowers almost every day. But then, when I proposed marriage to her, because she was the smartest, strongest, and most beautiful woman I'd ever met, she told me that she was already married to Jesus. "But he's dead, you know," I said. "I'm married to him in spirit," she said. "Oh, then that's okay," I said, laughing. "In spirit, I've seen him too. So you can then have two husbands like Mary, Joseph, and God. I'll be your earth husband so we can kiss and have babies." She smiled and was just going to say something, I guess maybe accept my proposal, when that real old nun rushed into the room, the one who'd called the priest, and slapped me so hard that I was knocked out of my chair. Then she began to hit the younger nun, knocking the habit off her head. This was when I saw that my little nun had the most beautiful reddish-brown hair in all the world. It looked just like my horse Caroline's, the sorrel. I jumped up and attacked, biting the old nun on the back of her leg so hard that she screamed out in pain, swinging around and around, trying to get me off her leg. She called me the devil and sent for the priest again, and boy, did he get mad at me this time when he found out which nun I'd proposed marriage to. I guessed he was in love with her, too. I was now called an infa-something, locked in a closet with brooms and mops, and every day I'd be marched to church to sit alone so I could repent for my terrible sins. But I could never figure out which terrible sins I should repent for. So I'd just sit there in the cool darkness of the church all alone, and I began to like it. Sitting quietly one day, I realized that all the statues and pictures on the walls of the church were talking to one another, just like Duke and those dolphins had spoken to one another. I liked this. It almost sounded like the whole church was alive with a symphony of purring. Soon I began to like getting punished, just so I could be sent to the church to be alone. I began to draw stars once again, holy stars, and now, since I'd seen my brother with Jesus down on the beach, I knew why I loved to draw stars. Drawing stars was what helped us kids keep our soul memories alive. Drawing stars was what kept us from going crazy, surrounded by all the doubt and fear that adults had. I began to notice that I wasn't the only one drawing stars. So were half of the kids in my school. I'd see stars in their workbooks. I'd see stars on the cover of their binders. I'd see stars on the palms of their hands. But of this I told no one, except my sister Linda. I was in enough trouble already. One day I was walking to the church alone to repent for my sins when I spotted my little nun. "Hello!" I yelled to her. I hadn't seen her since the day that I'd proposed to her. But when she saw me, her face filled with terror, real terror, and she turned and ran away from me as fast as she could. I ran after her, across the grass and into the building she'd entered. Here there were nuns dressed just like her everywhere. I was stopped by one nun and asked what I was doing in their private quarters. I tried to explain, but I was grabbed and slapped before I could say anything. Then one nun, I'll never forget, said that I was the devil boy who'd caused Teresa all her trouble. Two big, strong nuns grabbed me real hard and took me out of the building, back across the grass, into another building, and I was locked in a dark, smelly room where I could cause no more problems. Then came the priest, the same one who'd gotten so angry when I'd proposed to the little nun. He screamed and shook me so much that day that I puked. When I got home after school, I immediately saddled up Caroline and went running along the railroad tracks. I climbed up the hill from the tracks to the green grass of the cemetery and tied Caroline to the fence that ran along the outside of the burial grounds. I climbed the fence and ran up to the big white cross with Jesus and Mary. "What the hell is going on?" I yelled at Jesus. I was so mad. "Huh? What's wrong with you and my brother? I thought that you two were looking out for me. I didn't do anything wrong, and yet I just keep getting in trouble. That's not fair, damn it. And yes, I mean damn it. Damn it, damn it." But Jesus and my brother wouldn't talk to me. I guess that they didn't like me cursing at them. It was Mary who finally spoke. "Come to me," she said in a lovely, soft voice as she put out her arms for me. "And let me hold you. We all know how hard it is for you, and we love you with all our hearts." I went to Mary. She wore such beautiful, colorful clothes, and I lay down on the grass beside her as she held me. It felt so good to be in her arms. I relaxed and cried and cried, and soon the rage began to leave my body. Then I felt two hands begin to massage my back. It was Chaba Boy. I just knew it. "Joseph," I said to him without turning to look at him, "really, it should have been me to go, not you. I'm not smart enough to figure out what to do here," I said with tears coming to my eyes. "I'm a burro, the dumbest kid in all of our school. You should have stayed and become a lawyer like you said you were going to do. What can I become except maybe just stupider? Damn it, Joseph," I added, suddenly getting angry again. "Why did you leave me? You never had any problems learning how to read. You were a genius. I should have died, not you." The massaging of my shoulders stopped just like that, and I realized that I shouldn't have gotten mad and used the word damn, but I was so damn mad that it was hard not to say damn when I felt like the whole world was against me. I must have fallen asleep, because the next thing I knew, I awoke feeling really good. Wonderful, in fact. I stretched and yawned and felt like I'd maybe gone up to heaven to visit for a little while. I looked to the west and saw the tall, flat mesa where Shep had leaped into the sky to intercept my brother's soul, and I just knew that this was indeed a sacred, holy place where I was. I decided to start coming to this place, our place, every day after school. This I would never tell anyone except my sister Linda. The following year, our little sister Teresita was born, and our father took Linda and me to see her at the hospital, but they wouldn't let us in because we were too young. Our father winked at us, then he took us around to the back of the hospital. He opened a window and lifted Linda and me up to the window so we could crawl in and meet our baby sister. This was so exciting. We were all a little familia hiding from the hospital authorities. This was the same year that my parents sent me to a new Catholic school, St. Mary's Star of the Sea at Hill Street and Wisconsin in Oceanside. At this new school, it had just opened, things got much better for me, and I think that it was partly because of the school's name, Star of the Sea. But still, I could see that I really wasn't learning how to read any better. It was just that now we were no longer required to stand up and read aloud in class, so no one realized that I couldn't read. This was also when I met Nick, Claire, Sally, and Dave Rorick, whose father owned Rorick Buick in downtown Oceanside. I became good friends with Nick, who was in my same grade, and his friend Dennis Tico, who was the best-looking guy in all of our school, or so all the girls said. Myself, I'd started to put on weight ever since my brother's death, and then gained even more weight when I hadn't been allowed to play with the other kids at the San Luis Rey Mission School. I went to St. Mary's Star of the Sea for 2 years, and even though I never learned to read any better, I was able to at least hide this fact from the other kids. For the first time since I started school, I wasn't called stupid or slow. I got to play on the playground with the other kids, and everything was going pretty well, until one day, when a real poor-looking blondish kid was put in our class. He had 3 younger sisters, and they all wore dirty, old-looking clothes, and they'd pick their noses without caring if anyone was watching. His name was Augustus, and he was in the same class as Nick's and mine. They had us in alphabetical order by our last names, and Augustus was placed right in front of me. Just before lunchtime, when it was time for us to stand up, put our hands together, and pray, it was easy to see that Augustus really didn't want to do it. "Put your hands together and pray with us," said our teacher, Sister Michael Mary, who was also the principal. Augustus just shook his head, looking all beaten down. "I said Sister Michael Mary, raising her voice, "put your 2 hands together this moment and do your prayers with the rest of us." Augustus was hurting, I could tell, so I spoke up for him. "But sister, you just gave us a long talk on free will, so if he doesn't want to pray, then he doesn't have to." But my words didn't help. Sister Michael Mary, who was usually pretty calm and fair-minded, now rushed down the aisle and grabbed Augustus by the shoulders and shook him real hard. I guessed that she thought that it was he who'd spoken up.
"Don't talk to me about free will," she yelled. "We took your family in when we had no more room, and you will now pray like everyone else when it's prayer time."
"But sister," I said, still trying to help Augustus out, "this goes against everything that you've been teaching us all month. You said that free will gives us the freedom of choice, so he has the God-given right to—"
"You haven't been here a month!"
she screamed at Augustus, grabbing his hands and slapping them together.
"Now pray! You hear me? Pray!"
She was so angry that she couldn't see that it wasn't Augustus who was talking. It was me who was behind him. She turned and went back up to the head of the classroom and continued leading us in prayer. Augustus just dropped his hands once again, and I could see from the back of his shoulders that someone, somewhere, had broke him real bad, like so many stupid, mean cowboys did with horses. But Sister Michael Mary couldn't see any of this, and when she saw him drop his hands again, she came flying across the classroom. She slapped him in the face until Augustus finally put his hands together to pray. The moment we went out of the classroom for lunch, Augustus took off after me, yelling that he was going to kill me for getting him in trouble. I took off running, but he caught up with me at the end of the playground. "I'm sorry," I said, between heaves for air. I'm really sorry. I was just trying to help you.
Well, don't try and help people, you fool, he said, hitting me two or three more times.
I didn't fight back. I could see that he was just upset.
I never told them to take us in, he said. Our pa left us, going back to Texas, and my ma didn't know what else to do to feed us except take us to the priest like her ma always done.
He quit hitting me and started crying. I apologized some more. He finally forgave me, saying that he knew that I'd meant good. We then walked back to the school buildings where everyone was having lunch. I got my lunchbox, and when I saw that Augustus had no food, I split my lunch with him. And he told me the strangest thing, that his grandma was Mexican, and she too had always made egg and chorizo burritos for him. I couldn't believe it. He was blondish, and yet he was part Mexicano. The next day, I brought extra burritos for Augustus and his two little sisters, but they were gone. They never came back to school. I guess that they'd gone back to Texas to try and find their dad. About a week later, our new young priest from the Oceanside Parish came to our school. His arms were thick and real hairy, and he informed us that a great opportunity was available for us students if we said one rosary every day for world peace for two straight weeks. If we accomplished this, we'd get a special picture of a saint to carry in our pocket, and we would also have a guaranteed passage into heaven when we died. I wanted to ask the priest how this was possible, because it didn't make any good horse sense to me. Did this mean that after we said these rosaries for 2 weeks, we could go out and do bad, mean things and still have a guaranteed passage to heaven? But by now, I'd been beaten enough and seen enough slapping and yelling any time one of us kids asked a good question that I knew better than to ask this. My God, back in third grade, when I'd told What a King that I'd figured out that there was no Santa Claus, his parents had told him that it was true. There was no Santa. It was they, our parents, who gave us our Christmas presents. They also told him to keep away from me, because any kid who went around telling other kids such things was a bad person. So then, I guessed a kid was bad if he questioned, and was a no-good rat if he figured things out. My dad had sure been right when he'd told me that in every game there were two sets of rules, one for the public and another for the insiders to use only for themselves. Realizing this, I began to feel that purring behind my left ear. Then I heard the Ghost Rider's song that my brother had listened to over and over again the last few months of his life. I smiled. So this meant that Joseph was now up in heaven with Papito, helping him to massage the back of my head. I decided to say nothing to the priest or nun of what I was thinking and sign up for these rosaries too. Why not? Anything that would give me a better chance of getting into heaven so I could be with my brother when I died made a lot of good, common horse sense to me. But then, to my complete surprise, when I raised my hand like the other kids, and said that I'd also like to sign up for these 2 weeks of saying a rosary a day, Sister Michael Mary looked at me and said, "Are you sure you want to do this?" "Yes," I said. "Do you understand that this is a serious commitment?" "Yes," I said again. "Okay," she said, "but I'll be checking on you every day to make sure that you did say your rosary." My heart started pounding. "Does this mean that you'll be checking on the other kids, too?" I asked. She exploded.
"You will not question my authority. I will check on whom and what I see appropriate."
"Well, what is appropriate? Because you only asked me if I understood that this was a serious whatever you said, and you didn't ask any of the other kids when they raised their hands."
And I knew that I was a burro to have said all this. I should have just kept quiet. And I was right, because she now came flying across the classroom with her white robe and black habit flapping like wings, scaring the pee out of me. She got right in my face, and I could see in her eyes that she wanted to grab me and strangle me to death. But thank God she didn't. Instead, she caught her breath, heaving and puffing, and said,
"You'll be getting your walking papers if you keep this up."
"What are those?" I asked, not understanding. I've never seen papers that got legs and can walk.
Some kids started giggling.
Silence! She screamed, whirling on everyone.
The kids froze, and she turned back to me.
Don't you think that we don't know about your past? She said to me. We were warned about you by the mission.
And saying this, she stared at me, giving me that mean eye that only the best of the old nuns can give. I said nothing more, and that afternoon after school, I asked Nick, who was the smartest kid in the whole school, what he thought.
About what? He asked.
We were on our bikes, on our way to his house, which was really two houses right next to each other by the oceanside pier. They were brown and huge, and each was two stories.
About how Sister Michael Mary didn't want to answer my question about what's appropriate, and she went crazy.
You had it coming, he said.
I had it coming, I said. But Nick, it wasn't fair that she was only going to check on me and not the other kids.
Maybe, or maybe not, he said. You're not one of her most active participants in extracurriculum, so it seems strange for me, too, that you'd volunteer. I'm not going to volunteer. I hadn't really understood everything that he'd said, but still I wanted to tell him that this wasn't what was going on. In my opinion, I thought that she'd singled me out because I was... But I couldn't bring myself to use the word Mexican, because my new friends at this school didn't really see me this way. I said nothing more. We parked our bikes in the backyard of the two huge brown houses. The backyard had green lawns, beautiful flowers, red brick walkways, tall trees, a huge fish pond, and white furniture. I visited with him and his sister Claire. Then we went uptown to take Claire to her piano lesson. Nick went back home so he could go to the beach with Dennis Tico. I went to our local stationery store to buy another fountain pen. A few weeks ago, I'd discovered peacock blue ink. It was love at first sight. This was the exact shade of blue that I'd been looking for all my life, so I could color in my stars, then jump in them and be gone. For me, blue wasn't just blue anymore. I was beginning to see that there were at least 10 different shades of blue. That's what I had seen when I'd been on Duke, swimming with the dolphins. I'd seen all the water alive. Nothing was just what it was. Everything had many shades of reality. Blue wasn't just blue. Water wasn't just water. No, everything was alive with all these different shades of color and light. And every shade of color or light felt different so deep inside of me. Like I'd found that when I colored in my star with this exact shade of peacock blue, then added that tiny touch of red and yellow, immediately the purring began behind my left ear. Then the whole world suddenly became alive all around me, just like when I'd seen Jesus and my brother. Color and light, these were the eyes of my purring, the eyes of Papito seeing through us humans. I parked my bike outside of the stationery store. It was a new bike, just like Nick's, with slender tires. I hardly rode my big old heavy Schwinn anymore. I went into the stationery store all excited, with my pen in hand that I'd purchased the week before. I wasn't able to find what I wanted, so I walked up to the cashier. "Madam," I said, really happily, "I'd like to buy another pen like this one and another jar of your peacock blue ink." Instead of addressing my question, the woman reached over the counter and snatched the pen that I was holding right out of my hand.
"Give me back that pen," she snapped. "You can't just take our merchandise."
"But, madam," I said, suddenly getting all confused inside, "I didn't take it. I bought it last week."
"How can I know that?" she said. "You're a Mexican, and everyone knows that Mexicans are thieves and can't be trusted. Now out of here."
I was shaking so hard by the time I went out the door that I couldn't even get on my bike. She'd looked at me with that exact same kind of look that Sister Michael Mary had looked at me. And my friend Nick hadn't seen it. But how could he? He'd spoken English on his first day of school, and he'd learned how to read immediately. Hell, last week when we'd been tested for reading, he tested 6 grade levels ahead of everyone, reading at an advanced high school level. And me, I'd made sure that I was homesick on the day we were tested for reading, because I knew that I was still below a third grade reading level. I took a deep breath. So this was it? As long as people saw me as a Mexican, I could never be trusted by anyone, not even by a nun who was supposed to be so wise and close to God. No wonder all those quicker-learning Mexicans had said they were Spanish or French, anything but Mexicano. Realizing this, I got to feeling so bad and hopeless that I wanted to tear the brown skin off my body. I was shaking so bad by the time I got up to the street where Nick's sister Claire was having her piano lesson that I didn't want to see her. I was supposed to accompany her home, but I felt so heartbroken and angry that I couldn't see anyone. When I saw Claire come out of the house where she'd taken her lesson, I felt so ashamed that she might see me crying that I took off on my bike without saying a word to her. Chapter 20. I was in the 7th grade when I started going to the Army and Navy Academy. My little sister Teresita was talking pretty well by now. It was early evening, and school wouldn't really start until the next day, but this evening we, the new day students, had to go for a 2-hour orientation. All the way home, my little sister Teresita kept laughing and moving her arms up and down, pretending like she was marching. Then she'd bark orders at me, just as she'd seen my fellow cadet leaders bark at me. I didn't think it was funny in the least, but Teresita and Linda and my parents thought that it was hilarious. The following day, on my first official day of school at the Army-Navy Academy, my problemas immediately got started with Moses. He was a captain, as were all of our teachers in the lower school, meaning the 7th and 8th grades. It was late afternoon, and we were done with our classroom studies and our marching. Now we changed clothes, got out of our uniforms, and went to do sports. I wasn't very tall, but I was one of the bigger kids, especially since I'd put on all that weight since Joseph's death. I'd never played baseball or football, so I had no idea what was going on when they threw the football at me. I ducked so it wouldn't hit me. Moses got mad and told me that my brother Joseph had been one hell of a football player, so for me to wake up, catch the ball, and run with it through the line of scrimmage. I had no idea what this word scrimmage meant, and I didn't see any line to run through either. But I could see that Moses was getting madder and madder, and he finally called the three biggest guys aside, Walrick, Altomar, a Mexican guy, and this other huge cadet named Williams. These three guys had little smiles on their faces, and they hit me really hard the next time I was given the ball. I wanted to cry. My brother had gotten sick and died because of a football injury. I didn't want to get sick and die. This was when a great big heavyset cadet named Hillam came to me, helped me up, and spoke to me in a kind voice. "Do you know why they want you to run with the ball?" "No," I said. He laughed. "It's because that's how we score."
"Score what?"
"Points."
"Points for what?"
"To win."
"Oh, like my cousin Chemo used to do for the football team in Oceanside. But he didn't run at any line. He'd run around people, across the field to those tall posts."
"Yes, but in practice we don't run all the way to those posts. To save time, we run at the line of scrimmage, which in football jargon means the line of the opposing team."
"Oh," I said.
"Well, then why doesn't Moses just say that?"
"Because he likes to show off how much football jargon he knows," said Hillam, laughing.
This guy Hillam I immediately liked. He made good plain horse sense. It was then time for us to go in, and all the way back to our barracks the other cadets kept pushing and shoving each other. Then they'd hit me when I wouldn't push and shove back. We had to strip to shower. I'd never stripped in public. The guys were laughing and snapping at each other with their towels, and when we got in the showers, Altomar, a guy way bigger than me, looked at my penis and said,
"You call that a dick? Hell, you don't even got any hair."
He started laughing. Then under his breath, he said to me, "Your dad might have the biggest house in all the area and think he's a big shot with his big cigars and Cadillac, but here you're nothing but dead meat, punk."
And saying this, he hit me in the stomach so hard that I went down, gasping for air. Altamar laughed and said, "What happened? Did you slip?" And he grabbed me and jerked me to my feet and continued showering as if nothing had happened. That was when Walrick, our class leader, came in, and he and Altamar started talking like they were best friends. And it turned out that they were. Both already had hair all around their private parts, and they were from Vista, and Vista now had its own high school, so they were rivals of Oceanside. I was stunned. I had no idea how Altamar even knew about our home. My parents' Cadillac, of course, everyone had seen when they brought me to school yesterday evening for orientation. I never showered that day. No, instead I got dressed and went outside to wait for the bus to take us day students home. For the next 5 years at the Army-Navy Academy, I never once showered at school. I'd always wait until I got home. This was also when I began to have trouble peeing in public toilets, and then, finally, even at home, in private. By the end of the first week at the academy, I understood very clearly that Moses was best friends with Walrick, Altamar, and a couple of the other bullies. In fact, I began to see that it was he who was instilling in these guys the idea that they had to be real men, and real men were tough, gave no quarter, which I thought was really funny. Did this mean that they gave half dollars? The academy became my new living hell, just as the little weed had been for me out in the San Luis Rey Valley and the Oceanside public school system before that. They all saw their job was to break us, not to befriend and amansar us. They hadn't been raised like women for the 7 years of their life, so they had no idea how to be gentle, patient cowboys, Christians, or cadets. Many a night I cried myself to sleep, asking God what was going on. But I could no longer hear that little voice deep inside of me, nor feel that humming behind my left ear, even when I drew stars and colored them. I felt abandoned by Papito. I felt abandoned by my brother Joseph, Shep, Sam, and my two grandmothers, and even Jesus and Mary. Then came that short, muscular, blonde substitute teacher, and he put his poster on the wall of skiing in Colorado, and hope was born. For 3 glorious days, I once more felt the humming, and I could hear God's purring voice of love, too. But when the substitute teacher left, I began to hate that he'd ever come into my life and given me even a little glimpse of light in my awful darkness. I could now see that the nuns had been right when they'd called me the devil, because now that Moses had given me that F without even reading my paper, then ridiculed the name that my dad had given me, I was thinking evil thoughts every time I'd see him. I was going to kill him. I was going to do as evil does. This was when I called up information to get Captain Moses' phone number and address. Getting it, I dialed his number. He answered. I heard him say, "Hello, hello," over and over again, and then I hung up. Now I was the one who was smiling. I decided to call information again and get that playground teacher's phone number and address, the one who'd tortured us in kindergarten. I got it. I called her. She answered, saying hello, hello, too. I hung up, and I just couldn't stop smiling. Now I had a plan. Now I had a reason to live. Now I was going to kill these two teachers and that priest and nun who'd abused me. I was going to blow them all into smithereens, and I'd do it all in one night. But then I remembered that I didn't have a permit to drive a car.